Everybody, I hope everyone is having a most meaningful fast. Today being the Tainus of Shavasar Batamas, or the day that we commemorate Shavasar Batamas, I just wanted to share a beautiful idea, an insight that I saw in the Sefer of Reb Shimshon Pinkus. It's a very beautiful idea about Churban Beis HaMikdash, and it gives us a little bit of a different perspective. Just to begin, the Gemara says in Pesachim Daf Nun Dalet that there were seven things that were created before Bias HaOlam. Before the world was created, there were seven different items that were already created before the existence of the world itself. And the Beis HaMikdash is considered one of the items on that list. And the Achronim point out that the reason why is because obviously this is something that is so fundamental. Having a Beis HaMikdash in our lives is something that is so important, it's so central. And that's why it was necessary for that to have been created even before the world itself came into existence at all. In fact, the Gemara says in Yuma, Daf Mem Dalid, that the reason why we call it the Evan HaShasiyah, which was in the place of the Kodesh HaKadashim, is because Shemimenu Hushtas Kol HaOlam Kulo, because from there emanated the entire world. So there seems to be some extreme significance not only to the Kodesh HaKadashim, but also to the entire Beis HaMikdash. And when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, this is considered to be a tremendous loss. So there's a very well-known Medrash, where the Medrash writes in Eicha Rabasi. I'm sure many of us have heard the Medrash in the past, but what I want to share today is a little bit of a different perspective, a different insight into this Medrash, probably something many of us have never thought of. So the Medrash says, Mizmar LaAsaf. We have a parak in Tehillim that says, Asaf was sitting there and he's singing and he's dancing and he's all excited. What's the song that he's singing? Oh, this is great. The non-Jews have come into your palace, into your home, and they have destroyed it. Timu Eseichal Kachecha. And this is a wonderful reason for Asaf to be singing. So they asked him, why is it that Asaf gets up and he's singing and he's dancing and he's clapping and he's playing music to the tune of, oh, the Goyim have destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, what is so exciting about that? It should say, this is the lamentation of Asaf, this is the kina that Asaf is now reciting at the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. So what does it mean, Mizmar LaAsaf? So the Medrash goes on to say, Mashal HaMelech She'asaf Beis Chupa LeBino. So there's a Melech, there's a king, who makes a big, exquisite banquet for his son's wedding, and he builds this beautiful hall, and it's something that everyone is enamored by. Visida Vikira Vitzira, and he does all the beautiful tapestry, and he has all the artists coming to make it look as beautiful as possible. V'yatza ben ala tabrizira. Then, after all is said and done, the child goes and he gets drunk in the streets, and he breaks the shidduch, and everything goes wrong, everything goes downhill. So now the king wasted all of his time, all his effort, all of his energies to build this beautiful home. His son is not even going to get married. So the melech is very upset. Ala hamelech l'chupa. The melech goes up to this place that he had prepared for his son. V'karas havilos. He goes and he rips down all of the tapestry. V'shibaras hakanam. And he breaks all of the beautiful structures that they had put up. V'natal pedagog shalo evo shalkanam. And here there's a friend or a mentor of this son of the melech who goes ahead upon seeing everything that's happening. He goes ahead, he takes out his flute and he starts playing music and he's very excited. V'hayim azamer. Amrilo, so they turn to him and they say, isn't this highly inappropriate? This is not the time to be singing music, to be dancing, to be excited. Hamelech hafachu paso albano. The melech went ahead and destroyed that place which he had prepared for his son to get married in. And you are going, va'ata yoshivu mezamer, you're sitting here and playing music and dancing, you're celebrating over this? What kind of response is that? Amrilehem, he says, mezamer ani, the reason why I'm excited, the reason why I'm celebrating is, shahafachu paso shalbano. I'm happy about the fact that the melech only destroyed the physical structure of the son's wedding hall. V'lo shafach hamaso ablino. And he didn't go ahead and destroy his own son. He didn't go and kill the boy for the way he's acting. Kach amru la'asav. So this is the same conversation that took place here. We are watching as the Beis HaMikdash is being destroyed. Asav gets up and the response that he evokes is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hichriv Heichal HaMikdash, the Ribbono Shel Olam goes ahead and destroys the Beis HaMikdash, and Asaf gets up and he starts to sing. So everybody comes to him and they said, what kind of response is that? It seems highly inappropriate. So Asaf says, Amar Lahem, Mizamer Ani, the reason why I'm singing is, Sheshafach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chamaso Al HaEitzim Al HaAvanim. I'm happy about the fact that God let out His wrath, so to speak, on the Eitzim HaAvanim, on the physical structure of the Beis HaMikdash. And he didn't go ahead and destroy the Jewish people because of the decadent level of immorality that they find themselves on at this moment. That's what the Medrash ends, and that's why Asaf is going ahead and singing. So, I always understood the Medrash until I saw this beautiful interpretation. I always understood that it meant that it was a time when God was very angry, so to speak, and really he should have carried out his anger on the Jewish people. He should have destroyed us. And instead of doing that, he decided to do us a favor. He's just going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. So Rav Shimshon Pinkus thinks that that is something that is unreasonable. You cannot assume that way. Why? Because how can you say that God has such a, so to speak, kaviyachal, he had such a temper tantrum that he couldn't hold back. He couldn't hold himself back. And he was blowing up with anger, so he decides, you know what? Like sometimes you have a little kid. Instead of going and punching the parent for being angry at what the parent said, they're going to go and hit the wall. So that's what happened with God here. Really, he has such a temper tantrum. He's so angry at us, he's ready to blow up an outrage and an outburst. And instead of doing that and destroying the Jewish people, he goes out and he says, you know what? I'm going to go punch the Beit HaMikdash. I'm going to destroy the building. That's the way I'm going to let my anger. What do you mean? If God decided that it was time to destroy the Jewish people for the way that they were acting, so go destroy the Jewish people. And if not, so what does it help to go and destroy the Beis HaMikdash? What's this all about? So he suggests a very beautiful interpretation, which is very different, and I believe it's a very insightful comment that he makes in understanding what the Medrash really means here. So he says as follows. He says a mashal that he offers from a very highly skilled artist, a very proficient artist who decides he's a painter, and he's been doing paintings for many years, many different kinds of projects that he has. But he decides that it's time for him to really work on a life's work. Yeah, I've done all this kind of painting, that kind of painting. It's time for me to work on something absolutely beautiful, something that I'm going to invest, I'm going to devote all of my energies, all of my time, and I'm not going to be distracted at all. I'm not going to take any other projects. This is all I'm going to work on right now because I have to leave over a legacy of one beautiful painting over to the world after all of my other paintings that I've done. So he decides the only way to do that is to go up to a magnificent, to a breathtaking view on the top of a mountain, on the top of a cliff, and he decides there he's going to be able to sit totally uninterrupted, without any distraction. He's going to be able to sit there with no disturbance. There's going to be no noise up there. He's going to see the beautiful view in the background, and that's going to be the way he's going to dedicate all of his energies to make sure the painting comes out as beautiful as possible. He brings up with him a little helper who's going to bring him all the different colors that he needs and all the different paintbrushes that he needs, but that's it. It's just the two of them up there. So he's working without distraction very diligently, and he's there for a couple of days, and finally, after he's finally done, he has this beautiful, this exquisite painting comes out because he's sitting there without distraction and this is all he's working on and that's what he has. So he decides, now it's time for me to analyze, to examine the painting. Now it's time for me to scrutinize and make sure that everything's perfect just right before I finish it up. And he decides that it's very difficult to really have a good eye of analysis when you're standing so close to the painting. He decides he's going to step back a little bit. Takes a step back and he's looking at it, he takes his glasses off, puts his glasses on, he takes another step back, he moves a little further back, and he keeps moving further back to make sure that he's able to see the whole perspective of the picture and all the beauty, all the magnificence of this picture. So as he's going back, this helper of his realizes that he's so consumed, he's so engrossed in his painting and in examining everything about it, that he's not realizing that he keeps stepping further and further back, but he's going to step off the cliff. Don't forget, we went up to this beautiful mountaintop to make sure that there's going to be no disturbance, but now you want to look over your painting, you keep stepping back, that's going to be the end of you. So he starts screaming and yelling, he's waving his hands, he tells him, look, look where you're going, you're almost at the end of the cliff. And the person is so completely engrossed, he's so focused, he's so consumed with the painting, he's not even able to hear anyone yelling at him. And he's waving his hands and he's running toward him and he sees he's not getting anywhere. Finally he realizes if he doesn't do something, the person's going to lose his life. So he goes out, he takes a huge rock, and he throws it at the painting, and he destroys the whole painting. The man looks up, he's shocked, the painter, and he says to him, what are you doing? Didn't you realize this was my legacy? This is what I plan to leave over to the world? Didn't you realize that this is what I've been working so hard on for the last few days? And this is something that's so valuable to me? How can you just go ahead and throw a rock at it and destroy it? And he turns to him and he says, well, you weren't paying attention, but I'm telling you, I was screaming and yelling at the top of my lungs, I was waving my hands, you would have fallen off the cliff. I just saved your life. I didn't destroy your life. If I hadn't destroyed that painting, you would have lost your life yourself. Because you were so consumed in what you were doing, you didn't realize the bigger picture. You didn't realize what was happening outside of you. So this is what he suggests as the understanding as to Shafa Chamasa ala Eitzim va'avanim. The Gemara tells us that the Churban Bayis Rishon happened because of Avodah Zarah, Gilei Arayos, and Shfichas Dam. The three cardinal sins, the worst averus one can ever commit. Second Beis HaMikdash is Sinas Chinam. We all know Sinas Chinam is terrible. And he says, how is it possible that you can have a people living in the times of a Beis HaMikdash, and yet they're falling to the depths of immorality? How could it be that they're falling to a level where they serve Avodah Zarah, they have Gilei Arayos, and Shfichas Damim? How is it possible? How is it possible they sink to levels of Sinas Chinam that were unprecedented, that would warrant the Churban Beis HaMikdash? How is that possible? How can you understand that? If you're living in a time of Beis HaMikdash, aren't you probably going to live on a higher standard? And he says, no. He says, you think about what the experience was like at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it's not exactly what you thought. He said, here we were, we had a Beis HaMikdash. We had a house which was the house of Avinu Avarachaman, of our father, who showed his kindness, his understanding, his benevolence in the Beis HaMikdash itself. How do we know that? The Rambam tells us in Ilchus Tshuva. Every Yom Kippur they had an experience, they had an opportunity of the Sar HaMishtaleach, which was the goat that was thrown off the cliff, and that served as some sort of kapara. What kind of kapara did that offer? So the Rambam says, that offered a kapara al kol avera shebetorah, for any avera. So you spoke Lashon Hara, or you were Mechala Shabbos, or you ate on Yom Kippur, anything you did, hakalas v'achamura, says the Rambam. All you needed to do was, next Yom Kippur, Sar HaMishtaleach, God in His kindness and His mercy and His compassion is going to let you get away with it. Sar HaMishtaleach is Mechaper. And not only that, Ben Sha'avar b'zadon, Ben Sha'avar b'shgaga, says the Rambam. Even if a person goes ahead in defiance, and on Yom Kippur he's going to go ahead and eat a ham sandwich in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, on Yom Kippur, don't worry about it. Next year you'll come along to the Sar HaMishtaleach, even though you did everything b'mezid, even though you did terrible averus, you ate on Yom Kippur in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, a ham sandwich, everything wrong, no, doesn't make a difference. Sar HaMishtaleach is going to be Mechaper. You see, the Beis HaMikdash, says Rav Shimshon Pinkus, the Beis HaMikdash was the place of showing God's unbelievable mercy, of showing His kindness, of showing His understanding of us, even when we make mistakes that we were not supposed to make, and even when we made the mistakes on purpose. It wasn't even a mistake at all. It was something that we did with full intention. Still, the Beis HaMikdash was the place that we were able to absolve ourselves of all of our mistakes. In fact, the Gemara says in Yuma, why is the Beis HaMikdash referred to as Levanon? He says, the Gemara tells us, because Shemal bin Avonoseim Shal Yisrael, you can do all the averus in the world, all you need to do is show up in the Beis HaMikdash, and everything is gotten rid of. You have no problem at all. He gives the example. He says, let's say you have a person in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, and it happens to be it's Shabbos, and he forgets that it's Shabbos. He calls up his stockbroker, and he says to him, you know, I'm getting the feeling that today is going to be a good day. I want you to invest $50,000, go ahead and buy some shares in whatever stock it is. Go to the stock market. I want you to be involved. Buy for me and invest as follows. So he goes ahead and he does it, and a couple of hours later, he realizes, I cannot believe it. I can't believe I was just Mechal Shabbos. I called up the person, I did a malacha, I wired him the money, he went ahead, he invested for me, you're not allowed to do business on Shabbos. I went ahead, I gave him $50,000, now it's a few hours later, I made $5 million. Or $500,000, more reasonable. So I went ahead, I made $500,000, but the whole thing was done through an Avera. I wasn't allowed to do that on Shabbos. So he runs to the rabbi and he says to him, what should I do? I can't believe it, today was Shabbos. I went to the phone, I called up the stockbroker, I wired the money, I did all these malachas, terrible things. What do? The rabbi says, no problem. Go to the Beis HaMikdash, bring a carbon chatas. He did by mistake, no problem. Go to the Beis HaMikdash, everything's going to be fine. He says to himself, you know, I made such a horrible mistake. I'm going to buy the most expensive cow in the world. I'm going to buy a $10,000 cow. I'm going to bring that as a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. God should see how bad I feel about what I did. And that's what he does. And he goes ahead, comes up to the Beis HaMikdash, brings his $10,000 cow. As he's walking to the Beis HaMikdash, they show him there's a big pushka there that they're collecting money for all the activities in the Beis HaMikdash. Says, you know what, I did an Aveira, I'm going to give another $10,000 to the pushka in the Beis HaMikdash. Here he is, he's $20,000 down on the carbon, and yet, what has he gained on the deal? He made $500,000 for the mistake that he made for the Aveira that he committed, and he spends $20,000 and now he gets a kapara, he gets away with it. He gets away with it. So, in the end of the day, he goes back home, he says, hey, it was worth it. I'll try that again. Why not? It was worth it. After all, I got away with it, and look, I came out on top. I spent $20,000 for my experience of getting a kapara, and yet I made a few $100,000, so it was worthwhile. He says, perhaps, the Beis HaMikdash was the root, it was the source, it was the essence of the Aveira itself. And that's why the Ribbono Shel Olam had to destroy it. It's like the painter, who doesn't realize that the painting itself, as beautiful as it is, you're getting so involved, you're getting so focused on the wrong thing, you're seeing you're lacking the vision of the bigger picture. And that's what he suggests over here happened by the Beis HaMikdash. People were understanding that the Beis HaMikdash is a place to connect with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a place where they can, so to speak, see the display of God's kindness, of God's mercy, but because of that, they're forgetting the bigger picture. They're forgetting that there's a Shabbos. They're forgetting that there are averus, that there's a checks and a balance, that there are things you're supposed to do and things you're not allowed to do. You cannot just have the opportunity to say all the time, oh, I'm going to do whatever I want, and I'll just show up in the Beis HaMikdash, because after all, I have a relationship with God, and He's going to let me get away with it. And that's why the Beis HaMikdash, God kept sending them signs, and He kept waving His hand, so to speak, and He's telling them, you better fix up yourselves, you better stop falling to Avodah Zarah, Gilei Raos, and Shvichas Dam. How could it be they fell to that? The answer is because people felt, what's the big deal? I'll make the mistake, I'll serve Avodah Zarah, I'll show up to the Beis HaMikdash tomorrow, I'll get away with it. And that's really the way karbanos work. So that's why the Ribbono Shel Olam came along and he said, you're getting too caught up with the Beis HaMikdash. You're not seeing the bigger picture. You're not seeing that there's a lot more that you're expected to be doing, and it's not just all about the relationship with me and the karbanos that you're going to offer. There's a whole religion that you're supposed to be following. And he says, then it comes to after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and the Jewish people turn to themselves and say, hey, now I'm faced with a challenge. I'm faced with an Avera in front of myself, and I'm not sure, am I going to violate the Avera or not? You say to yourself, well, how worth it is it? How am I going to get away with the Avera? Yom Kippur is not going to help me now. I no longer have the carbon sar mishtaleach. I'm not able to show up tomorrow. If I'm a Chal Shabbos, I better be careful, because if I'm a Chal Shabbos, I don't have the opportunity to bring a carbon chatas tomorrow. And therefore, we have to train ourselves to become better, because we were no longer able to get away with those Averas, so to speak, that we were able to do in the times of a Beis HaMikdash. That's, so to speak, why the Ribono Shel Olam perhaps had to be Shafa Chamoso Ala Eitzim Ala Avanim. It's not that it was an outrage. It's not that he was blowing up with anger and he decided to destroy something else instead. It's no. He saw that the root of the problem was the Beis HaMikdash itself. So you know what? We get rid of it. We got to rip the painting. We got to destroy it, because that's the only way that you're going to learn. Otherwise, you're going to fall off the cliff. There's going to be no religion left. That's the idea that he gives. He gives another example. He says, for example, you have a person who unfortunately has dementia. And often they don't always realize right away, and they're still driving around, and we know as children that it's dangerous for them to be driving around with dementia. They don't really understand. They don't have acute awareness of everything that's going on. So sometimes the children are going to say, you know what, you cannot drive the car anymore. That's not going to work. Just to give warnings and warnings and warnings is not going to work. Sometimes what you have to do is, you have to take the car away, you have to destroy the keys. That's the only way that the person's going to learn that if you do this activity, it's going to lead you to a great danger. That's exactly what the Ribono Shel Olam had to do to us as well, in order for us to understand that there's a bigger picture that we're supposed to be following. He then goes on, and with this we'll close, we'll go down to Mincha, but I thought this was a beautiful insight. He says, Baruch Hashem, nowadays, he says, there used to be a time when Yehudi Hishkim Kum Lifnas Boker, there were people who would get up early in the morning, Hispalo Lesatfila Karoi, we used to daven properly, slowly and carefully, Mitchila Vatsofu, we would make sure to say every word with Kavana, Ula'achar Mikein Yatzala Amo Yumo. We didn't have yeshivas, we didn't have kolalim, we didn't have places that people could just sit and learn a daf yomi. They knew we had to work hard. We woke up 5 o'clock in the morning, we went to shul, we davened with kavana, then we were on our way, that was it for the day. We came back late at night, we davened marav, that was it. He says, nowadays, we all claim to be, oh, we're Orthodox Jews, we're great, we have shuls, schools, we have yeshivas, we have everything, we're set. We're all set. So what's the difference if I come a little late to davening? What's the difference if I just whip on my tefillin and take them off before Ashrei, chop a little baruchu over here, get a kedusha over there, run out before davening's over, get there late after it starts? What's the big deal? After all, I'm going to learn the daf yomi today anyway. I'm going to say Kriya Shema Lamita tonight. I'm going to be a firm Jew. Everything's going to be fine. There's nothing to worry about. I'm doing everything okay. And he says that's the same mistake that they made at the times of the Beis HaMikdash. Does the Ribono Shel Olam have to take away all of those luxuries from us in order for us to realize how lucky we are to be living in the times that we have, to be living in the society that we have, to be living in a time when we're able to practice all the Judaism that we can, and to be having the Daf Yomi Shirim and all the plethora of Torah that we have? Therefore, he suggests that we have to remind ourselves every so often that it's not just about making sure we have that relationship. It's not just about making sure that we have the title of being a Ben Torah, of being an Orthodox Jew, of being a Shomer Shabbos. That's not good enough. What's more important than that is to see the overall greater perspective. What does God expect from me in the overall perspective of life? What does he expect of me? Does he want me to just do things in order that I should check it off and get away with it? Is that all the religion's all about? And to claim that I'm just an Orthodox Jew and that's good enough, that's not good enough, he suggests. Shafa Chamaso ala Eitzim Avanim is that we should remind ourselves of the opportunity to think of what is the root of the problem. And so often he says the root of the problem is the Beis HaMikdash itself, is the Daf Yomi Shir itself, it's the learning itself, that we hide behind that, so to speak, and say, I mean, I'm a frum Jew, I'm doing everything right, so who cares about the little Lashon Hara, who cares about the coming late to davening, who cares that I don't have Kavana, everything else is going to make up for it. But the Ribono Shel Olam teaches us that, unfortunately, when we have an attitude like that, sometimes he has to come along and take away that which we begin to take too much for granted, and because it's getting in our way, it's hindering our vision of what the overall perspective of Yiddishkeit is supposed to be about. Sometimes he has to take away the Beis HaMikdash to remind us what everything really is supposed to be in the proper perspective.